Good morning. So, last time we covered more of understanding the relationship between C code and data cache accesses. We saw kind of a general pattern that, you know, as someone writing code, we actually have control over how well the cache performs, and kind of the intuition is that usually having better locality, better spatial and temporal locality will improve our cache performance, will decrease the number of misses. We also saw that there's these kind of corner cases to watch out for, especially with powers of two, where we can, you know, have things go very poorly just because of how the cache indexing ends up working out. And we can avoid that as a programmer by avoiding having things separated by those powers of two. And we can, you know, generally increase our locality by like trying to make sure we access values together if we have a choice about what order we do things in. So we've talked a bunch about caches, so questions about things we covered before the break, before I move on. So some logistics. So page table 2 is due before the first lab on Wednesday, tomorrow. Late submissions aren't normally accepted because you are expected to have that code ready for the lab. And it's due before the first lab because I don't want to play the game of, no, really, I'm in the 6:30 lab now, trust me. Or getting complaints from the people in the 2 p.m. lab. So it's before the first lab. For the lab, lab attendance is required. If you cannot or should not go, please contact us. But this is not a lab you can do remotely unless you have special permission from us. The goal is to get feedback on your code from others. This is about organization, clarity, that sort of thing. It's not about debugging your code. The way this should work is that you're going to show the code on your screen with you controlling the scroll bar and all that. And they're going to look at it. We're not going to be running the code in a debugger. And you're going to get feedback, and we will expect you in the lab to be able to articulate what feedback you got. So, questions on the upcoming lab and other deadlines. Okay. So, we were talking about caches, and so far we've only dealt with reading from caches, but we know that we actually need to modify things in memory once in a while, and our caches need to handle that. And there's actually kind of a variety of choices that caches have made in practice regarding this. And there's kind of two big decision points with respect to what do you do when a program is writing a value to memory and we have a cache. So one decision point is, let's say we do our normal cache lookup, which we're still gonna do for writes. We're still gonna split it up into tag, index, and offset, take the index, look up that set of the cache, compare all the tags in that set to the tag of the address that came in. Let's say it's not there. What do we do about that? And with reading values, we assume we had temporal locality, and therefore we always read them. With writing, this is not done all the time. So if we were assuming we have temporal locality, what we would do, or even spatial locality, so this is best if assuming locality with writes, say temporal locality, writes would be this idea called write allocate, that just like when we were reading a value, we're going to add it to our cache. The other option I'll call write no allocate is that we just say, well, You know, we're only writing it. Why bother fetching it into the cache? We don't really care about it. And I say fetching it into the cache because typically, you know, we're going to have a cache block that's like 64 bytes long, and we're going to be writing, say, 8 bytes of it. So if we add that value to our cache, we need to get the rest of the block. We can't store part of a block in the cache. We don't have a way of indicating, yeah, we have this cache block here, but only these 8 bytes of it. We have to say it's there or it's not. So if we did write allocate, we're going to have to get the whole rest of this block from memory. So our write is going to turn into a big read. And that would make sense if we're going to actually read that stuff later. But with writes, that's often not really true. So we've seen there are caches that like do both sides of this design. They both do that extra fetching, saying, well, probably we'll need it. And they say, well, we're just writing. Maybe we don't actually care about this value. We shouldn't get it. So that's the first decision point. So that's, you know, if we have a cache miss. So then we have a second decision point. So if the value is in our cache, either because it was already there, like maybe we read it or a different part of the block earlier, or we just brought it into the cache, when do we actually apply the write we did to the next level of cache or the main memory? So in my example here, this is changed, and this is kind of in our cache. And in main memory, we have, you know, some value that was the original value. The question is, when do we actually do this update here? And there's two options for that. So the simplest to implement option is that we do it right away. So, and this idea is called write through. But this idea is kind of disappointing if we're thinking about caches. I told you when we introduced caches that the whole point is memory is slow. We don't want to be accessing memory almost all the time. So this write-through idea seems to contradict that now, you know, if our program has 20% of its memory accesses be writes, well, 20% of the time, we're accessing memory. Even though our caches are supposed to take that down to, like, 1%. But this is much simpler to implement, and we have to update the next level of cache eventually, or main memory. And as we'll discuss a little later, there are some implementation tricks which make this less inefficient than it might seem. The short version is we can kind of do the writes in the background while the program is doing other stuff. Now, the other option is that we're going to say, let's not update the next level immediately. Let's wait until later. And this idea is called write back. And the intuition behind this idea is that if we have a typical situation for this, you know, we can, you know, consolidate multiple writes, multiple updates into one write later. So like if we have a counter that we're updating, we can update the cache over and over again as the counter changes, and then later send that to main memory, you know, when we have all the updates together. Or if we're gonna end up writing to, you know, some other parts of this cache block, we can do all those updates at once rather than doing each one as they happen. And that's where WriteBack is going to give us a big performance benefit. When we're writing the same cache block multiple times, by deferring the update, yes, we still have to do it eventually, but when we do it, we'll just do all the updates that happen up to that point as one write rather than a separate one for each one, and that'll give us our kind of benefit of caches that we access the higher levels of cache and main memory along this. So questions on our two policy decisions here? Yes?
I'm a bit confused on like the if later part and whether or not like locality affects that. Like if you're saving everything for like one big like write to the cache, like would that need to be optimized for locality as well? And if so, like, how?
So the question is, how are we going to choose when the later time we write is? We're going to talk specifically about that. The strategy we're going to use is we're generally going to delay it as long as we can get away with. Other questions? Okay, so let's talk specifically about these two choices. So our first choice was allocate on write. So we have our two options. Mentioned the write allocate is that if it's not already in the cache, we add it. And this means that we're going to have to fetch the rest of the cache block. And if it's write no allocate, we just say if it's not in the cache, we're not going to use the cache at all for this write. We're just going to go through the cache, bypass it, because we're not going to store the value at all. So kind of with write allocate, what this would look like is, let's say the CPU says, hey, I want to write 10 to address ABCD. The cache is going to store a cache block containing ABCD. In this example, it also contains some other bytes. And it's going to have to read the rest of the cache block to make that happen. And after this, there's going to be a decision about, do we need to update main memory right away? And we'll talk about that next. But this is kind of our first step with write allocate. The value is not in the cache. We need to read in the rest. So even though this is a write, it turns into a read because our processor almost never writes a whole cache block at a time. Usually writes a much smaller amount. If it's write no allocate, the cache is way simpler to implement. We just forward that write to the next level of cache or main memory. We just say it's not there. We don't need to care about that value. We're not managing that value right now. So that's write allocate. So write back versus write through. So write through is, let's say we have the value cached, either because we just added it or it was already there. When in the write through policy, we're just going to update our cache and also send it to the next level. And this means that I'm done handling the write. I don't need to do any bookkeeping about this write anymore. Once I've sent it to the next level of cache, it's handled. The problem with our alternate scheme, and the reason why a bunch of caches don't implement it, is because, well, we're going to have to do some extra bookkeeping. And what we're going to do in the write-back strategy is we're going to modify the value in the cache, but not in the next level. So we're saving the access to the next level. But we have to remember that the value is modified. The reason we're doing this is that we can't just assume everything in our cache is modified, because if we did that, then every time we get rid of something from our cache, we need to make sure we update the next level. And that would be a lot of extra writes to memory, which would kind of defeat the point of our cache, which is supposed to make memory do less work. So we're going to remember specifically which blocks are what we call dirty, and we're going to have a bit, like the valid bit for that, we call the dirty bit, which is going to be one if this block was modified and therefore needs to be updated at some point in the main memory. But as I said, we're going to defer the update. And as long as we have an up-to-date version of the value in our cache, we're fine. We don't care that the value in main memory is wrong, because when the processor asks for the value, we're going to give the correct one from the cache. We're never going to, you know, accidentally go to memory and give them the wrong value. But the problem is that this value won't stay in the cache forever. We've learned, if you did the cache lab, that values get evicted. So at some point, we're going to have some Rita, some other cache block that conflicts with this and causes it to be evicted. And when that happens, at that point, we need to realize, oh, this is modified. I didn't update main memory yet. Better do that now, because if I don't do it now, I'll never have a chance. And so this means that our write back policy, this idea of deferring the updates, is going to turn a read from the cache into a read and write from main memory. What the reason why I say you read and write is that, you know, there's two steps that are happening here. We're going to write the value that was dirty and read the value that is actually conflicting with it. And if this were kind of our, you know, all that was happening, you know, you might say, wait a moment, doesn't this write back policy just make future reads slower? And, well, if we always have this kind of pattern where we write and then read a conflicting value, yes. But often, you know, what will happen is we'll have, you know, it's kind of a step, you know, 1B, where we'll write, you know, something else to that value and update it. We'll have maybe a 1C where we write to a value that's going to be a different part of the same cache block, and all those writes will be handled with one write later on to the main memory. And so we have to do some bookkeeping for this, so we're going to be adding kind of an extra bit for each cache block to track that dirty information. Some questions? Okay. So let's do through, let's say I'm writing to address 4, the value FF. So this has index 0 and tag 0000001. So how are we going to complete this write? We're going to go to index 0, and we're going to check whether the value is already there or not. Because if it's already there, we want to modify the existing block. So I'm going to check that. Well, I'm going to check, is this valid? And does the tag match? It does not. I'm also going to check, is this valid? And does the tag match? It does not. So the value, this is a miss. So then I need to figure out, well, it's a miss. And in this example, the slide tells me we're using a write allocate policy. So with a write allocate policy, I need to add the cache block that contains 0, 4 into the cache. So I need to figure out, where do I put it? And it looks like we have a least recently used policy here. So I need to find in index 0, what is the least recently used block? And this tells me, assuming that this is way 0, and this is way 1, that this here, this way one block is the recently used one. So we need to replace that. And normally, you know, what we've seen is how we replace a block is we just forget about it. But we can't do that here, because this block happens to be dirty. That means that we need to clean it up by telling memory to update its version of it, because memory's version is different than ours. And you might say, well, did we really modify both of the bytes of the block? Maybe not, but we didn't track that information, so we're going to send the whole thing to the next level of cache or main memory as an update. Then we need to actually, now that we've handled that block being dirty, we're ready to actually get rid of it from the cache and bring in the new block, which is going to be the block that contains 04 and 05. Now, we know we're writing to address 04, so we actually just need to read in one byte from memory, the value at address 05, and combine that with our value that the processor gave us, and that's the new value of the block we're storing in our cache. And we're going to update the LRU information to say, you know, this is now not the least recently used block anymore because we just did something with it. And we're also going to mark it as dirty again because we know that the value FF is not something we got from memory. So we need to have memory be updated with that information at some point in the future. We're using a write-back policy, it says in the slide, because that's what we chose. And that means that we're not going to do that until this value gets replaced by something else. Questions about our write allocate and write back scenario? Yeah?
Why did we write the index 0 on the right and not the index 0 on the left?
Why did we choose to use way 1 instead of way 0? Because our LRU information here told us that that was the least recently used part, and we're still following a least recently used replacement policy. So I think it's reasonable to say maybe we should change the replacement policy to take into account whether blocks are dirty or not. That is not an unreasonable idea, though I don't know of any processors that do that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, other questions? Yeah.
Again, how do you know it was one byte at 0x05?
How did I know there was one byte at 0x05? So our cache blocks in this example are 2 bytes. And 04, I guess I didn't write it down explicitly, has offset 0. And that's because 04 in base 16 is 0000100 in base 2, and this is our offset bit, this is our index bit, and everything else is our tag. And the cache block goes from the minimum offset to the maximum offset. This has the minimum offset, the maximum offset is what we get when we replace everything in the offset with all ones. So our maximum offset is that binary number, which happens to be the same as 05. So the block containing this is 045, is the cache block addresses. Does that answer your question? And in this example, there's only one other byte because of the 2-byte cache block. If we had like a 8-byte hash block, we have 7 other bytes, for example. Yeah.
Is there an easy way to tell where the cache block starts? Like, if we had, you know, if we just had, like, hex 123, what would be a good way of telling what cache block address is where we should start and end?
Question, how can I tell where the cache block starts? If you figure out where the index bits are, it starts where those where the offset bits are. It starts when the offset bits are all 0. So you just take the value, look for the offset bits, change them all to 0s. So that's how you can find where the cache block starts. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah.
Does writing update the LRU bit?
Does writing update the LRU bit? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so writing counts as a use. And I think the intuition would be, like, our assumption behind doing the write allocate, if we're doing write allocate, we're assuming we care about locality with writes, so we better update our LRU style information, because, you know, otherwise we probably shouldn't be doing write allocate if we don't believe write should count as a use for a replacement policy. Other questions? Okay. We also have the, you know, we could have write null allocate and write back, which is not actually a common combination. In that case, if we're writing this value, we look at our cache, we find out it's not in the cache yet, just send it to memory. So this is a combination we could have. So the write allocate decision is, if it's not in the cache, what do we do? Doesn't matter what the write back or write through is. That said, I will mention that what you'll see most commonly in practice, though there's probably some exceptions, is that either you will see write allocate plus write back. I guess I would say these are the most common back, or write through plus, I guess I should do this so it's actually hard. Write no allocate plus write through. And probably why these are the most common combinations is that write allocate and write back is like, take the most advantage of locality you can, right? You're trying to keep recently accessed values in the cache only. Write no allocate plus write through says, let's make the cache simple. We don't believe that writes have a big impact on locality. Let's just do the simplest thing in this cache. And so those are the two most common implementation designs. And I guess I'll note, like you might say, what write no allocate write through, that seems like kind of inefficient. Note that commonly a way you might see that is you might have an L1 cache, which is write through, write no allocate, and an L2, which is not. So often it's not the case that we're not using the cache for writes at all, we're just maybe, you know, kind of not doing much with the level one caches for writes or something like that. So let's do a little exercise. So we have a cache up here, and we're asking about these accesses performed alone. So assume for each of these three odd things, we start from the original cache as it is pictured in this slide. And the question is, which of them are we going to read something from the next level of cache or memory? And for which of them are we going to write something to the next level of cache or memory? And this is going to be a write allocate write back cache. Give you a bit of time to work through that.
Yeah.
Who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's start with our writing one byte to address 0x33. So who thinks this will require reading something from memory? Thinks this will not require reading something from memory? Okay. Thinks this will require writing something to memory? Thinks this will not require writing something to memory? Okay, so most people got this correct. There is no next level read or write. So what's going on here? So the first step I would do for this problem is figure out what the set index is of these axes. This is set index 1, and it has it happens that this is actually a hit. The value is there, the old value. So what are we going to do? To do this access, we're going to modify this to the new value, and we're going to update our dirty bit from 1 to 1. And this is the big reason why, you know, we want a write back policy, is that this access was kind of really cheap. And that's kind of the advantage of our write back policy. And this also means that it happens that this exercise has no examples for write allocate matters, because that's the only write, and it's already there. There was no decision about whether to add it, because it was already there. We couldn't add it. Questions about this? Yes. If the value was different, so if our new value was not the same as the one already in the cache, we do a write to main memory?
Because like we're writing one byte to 0x33, so yep. If our value is like 0x73 or something.
So you mean if the address we were writing to was different?
No, if we were still writing one byte to 0x33, but the value inside the cache, or I guess,
so I guess I would say, so if we're writing to this address, it doesn't matter what this value is. We're just going to modify the cache and make sure the dirty bit's 1, which it already is. We don't care whether it actually modifies the cache block or not. We're not tracking that. We're just tracking, did we write to it or not? If we're writing to a different address, then that's not going to be a cache hit. And we have to think about, okay, you know, is that other address, does it have its value stored in our cache? And there's some addresses which do, we see, and some which don't. If it wasn't, we'd have to bring it in. And that would, whether that would involve a write to memory or not, doesn't actually really depend on this specific address for writing, but what it would replace to bring into the cache. Right, so the way a write could trigger a write to main memory here is if the write had to replace one of these two dirty blocks. Because that's the only circumstance in a write-back policy under which we write a value that's currently in the cache to main memory. Only time is when we're getting rid of the value. And it's the value we're getting rid of, not the thing that triggers us getting rid of it, that gets written to main memory. So, for example, if I wrote to address 043, that would map to this set, and this is the least recently used right now. We would in that case write OX, I guess, then modify the new mem at OX33 through OX34 in that case. Plus, we do a read of memory at OX44 to bring in the rest of the block and modify this block because it's the least recently used one. If we had written to something with index 0, we wouldn't modify the dirty block, so we wouldn't have to write anything back because the least recently used block is presently this one in set 0. So even if we, regardless of whether we wrote or read, we would never, for next set 0, immediately write back anything. And I guess I'd note that I'm assuming we start with this as it exists, like after this access, we're going to change this to 0 because we just used the thing we wrote to. But all the problems are meant to start at the initial state of the cache, just so we don't have to have cascading errors. That answer your question? Yeah, but this is a common point of confusion. People, and it's understandable. You really want the value we just accessed to trigger to be what you're writing. With writeback, that is never what happens. It's never what we're writing to the main memory. Okay, so let's do our next one. So reading one byte from address 0x52. So, who thinks that this is... Oh, right, and I do have the update there. Who thinks that this is going to trigger a read from the next level of cache for memory? Thinks it's not going to trigger a read from the next level of cache for memory? Okay, this is going to trigger a write to the next level of cache for memory? Thinks it's not? Okay, so most people say a write, a read, and not a write. A write, read, and a write, so this is what we get. So the way this access works is that we have set 1, and in the current state, the least recently used part of set 1 is here, so we're going to end up bringing in 52 and 53, the block, offset 0 through 1, containing 52. And as part of that, we need to get rid of something that was dirty. That means we're going to write it back to main memory. This is our pattern. We access something else that triggers a write of a different thing. Questions? Here, yeah. We set the LRU bit to 0? Yes, because we just used the thing in ways 1. So now way 0 is the next thing we want to replace if we have another access that needs to replace something. Answer your question? Yeah.
Would it be any different if it was set one, offset one instead? If it, like,
question, would it be any different if it's set one, offset one? Nope. Exactly the same operations to do. The only difference between the two is what we're going to give back to the processor after we update the cache. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, how about our next access is reading 1 byte from address 50. I do have a slide. Sue thinks this is going to involve writing to the next level of memory or cache. Thinks it is not. Okay, who thinks this is going to involve reading from the next level of memory or cache? Thinks it is not. So we have most people saying no write and a read, that's what I get. So this is in set 0. And in set 0, the least recently used right now is 30 and 31. So that's what we're going to replace. That's not dirty. And the reason we're tracking this dirty information is so we don't write back things all the time, because that would be slow. So this dirty information is telling us, yeah, we have this copy of 30 and 31, but it's the same as what's already in memory because it's never been updated with a write. Therefore, we can just get rid of it. Just like we were doing when we sort of did our cache access stuff with just reads, we just forget about it, cross it out, we're done, and replace it with a new value, and of course update our LRU information because we just accessed that new block. So question?
Will it not set up so that in wait zero, it's always going to be, the 30 bit is always going to be zero, right? Like you can switch, in wait one, it's one and wait zero.
So the question is, it's possible for the dirty bit to be one and wait zero? Yes. So for example, if right now we wrote to address 50, we'd set the dirty bit in wait zero to one. And right now, you know, say, yeah, they cannot be both the same. It's just in this example, I happen to set it up that way. Other questions? Yes?
For the one previous to this, the reading 1 byte from 0x52, I'm still a little confused why it uses wave 1 offset
0. Why does it use wave 1 when the offset is 0? So. Okay, the offset doesn't get used in our cache lookup. So we have our cache, right? And we have our index, and tag plus valid. And we have our data. So when we access our cache, we're going to take our index bit. We're going to get some row of this cache, and we have kind of all the bytes of the row. The offset bits are only used for this last step where we decide between each of these possible bytes of the row which one we get. You can kind of say we have like a big box. So that doesn't affect anything until kind of our last step in a read from the cache. And for a write, it's a little more complicated because we have to bring these in, but like it's selecting part of the block. All the decisions about what row of the cache to use, which side of that row to use, which way of that row to use, that has nothing to do with the offsets. We can not know the offset and figure out exactly what's going to go on now. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so this is our write, allocate, write back. So let's do write, no allocate, write through. So similar cache. There's no dirty bit anymore because it's write through. We weren't tracking whether things are dirty because we always update main memory. Question says, which of these access will require reading or writing again? You find to do that. Would like some more time? Okay, so let's try our first access. So writing 1 byte to address 0x33 on this cache. Who thinks that will involve reading a value from memory? Thinks that it will involve writing a value to memory. Okay, so we have a consensus on that. That's what I get. So for this access, we're going to update this. I should use contrasting color. We're going to update that value in the cache, and also modify memory right away. How about reading 1 byte from address 0x52? You think that's going to involve writing something to memory? That's not going to involve writing something to memory. Think that's going to involve reading something from memory? Okay, so we have consensus on that. That we are going to replace 3.2 and 3.3. In this case, we have no dirty bit because we've already updated main memory with whatever modifications happened. So we're just going to bring in 5.2 and 5.3 there, update our LRU information. And for reading 1 byte from 0x50, the story is the same, except we put it in a different way because the LRU information was different. Questions about our write-through example. Yes, in this case, the write no allocate didn't come up, but for example, if we had, say, write 1 byte to 0x43, then that would be a write-through plus no modification to the cache. So that would be a write to my memory or the next level, but no modification to this cache because of the write no allocate policy. Questions? Yes. Okay, so this write-through policy seems kind of slow if we're doing a reasonable number of writes. It's not so bad. So one reason it's not so bad is that when we look at what typical programs do to access memory, a substantial majority of the accesses are reads and not writes. But the other thing which makes it not so bad is that we have this idea of a write buffer. So what I've shown you so far suggests that when we have to do write back or write through, the way that seems to work is that our cache can't do any work until we complete that write. So with write back, we have to write the value out before we can have space to bring something in. With write through, we can't complete the write because we don't have any place to put it until we put it in main memory. But instead, caches usually have what we knew as a write buffer, which is basically a little side cache of things that are being written, but haven't completed yet. So while we're waiting for values to get to the memory, we'll store them in this little buffer, and on accesses, we will check this as an additional cache to check before we check main memory. That's important because if I write a value and immediately read it with a write-through cache, I better read the value I just wrote, even if we're not getting it to main memory, you know, right away. We're doing that in the background. But this design, as long as our write buffer doesn't fill up, kind of makes writes instant. So as long as we have room in the write buffer, doing the write is add it to the write buffer, and we have this extra work that in the background, something's gonna go through the write buffer and actually send that to main memory. And also we have to check the write buffer just in case we read back something we just wrote. Some, like for a write back cache, something we just evicted, for a write through cache, something we just wrote and didn't, you know, that maybe wasn't allocated in our cache. So questions about this write buffer idea? Yeah. When is memory updated with the information in the write buffer? Usually, basically, the cache will do this as fast as it can. And if the write buffer fills up, write stall until there's space in the write buffer. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
So if we have something in the write buffer that hasn't completed yet, and then the program writes again, how does it handle it?
Question, if we have something in the write buffer and hasn't completed yet, and the program writes again, what do? Does it update the write buffer? I assume it would update the write buffer if it can. I'm not actually sure about real write buffer designs. There's probably some corner cases where that would be hard to do, and you'll have to write twice. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Question is the order in which do we check the cache and then the write buffer? I am not sure what caches actually implement. It would make sense in the hardware to actually do both in parallel because it's, you know, the write buffer is a physically separate thing. We can actually probably access it at the same time as the cache. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Where's the write buffer stored? It would be storage that's alongside the cache, probably like physically alongside the cache. And typically it's much smaller than the cache. Like this shows it like kind of big, but you know, write buffers are gonna be like maybe tens of entries. Whereas a typical cache will have, you know, hundreds of blocks there. Other questions? Okay, so that's kind of where we're going to finish up talking about main memory caching. We're going to talk about a different type of caching as our final topic. But before we like, really finish up talking about memory caching, we'd like to talk about, well, we have all these cache design trade-offs we've seen. Like we have to choose a block size, we have to choose a number of ways, a number of sets. We also have these hierarchies of caches. We have an L1, L2, L3 with different sizes, and you know, we have to figure out, well, how do we make those choices? And the typical answer is that, well, it's going to depend on the programs we care about, because we can make programs that kind of do the worst thing for every cache. In fact, we have an assignment coming up, the cache programs homework, where you essentially do that, and kind of the intuition is I can make any cache look bad by always accessing the thing we just evicted. You know, oops, you made the wrong choice. You evicted the wrong thing. Sorry, because I just wanted that right now. So you can always make a cache look bad, but the thing that makes caches succeed is that, as we mentioned when we introduced them, that programs have temporal and spatial locality and other properties like that make the caches work. And the details of that are going to vary between programs. So typically what real designers will do is they'll have some set of programs they care about, and they'll have a simulator, and they'll figure out, well, what happens if I change my block size from 64 to 128 bytes? How much does that change my hit rate? And they'll kind of look at what that does versus, you know, how much slower is the cache going to be if I make it have bigger blocks versus smaller blocks. And that's kind of the empirical process by which our processor designers arrive at the whole cache hierarchies we see. Some questions? Yeah. But usually, kind of, it's a, you know, there are these, I guess I would say, non-obvious trade-offs, like most of the changes that improve our hit rate make our hit slower. You know, things like that. Okay. So for next topic, we talked about memory caches, and when I talked about virtual memory, we have this lookup process, and I'm only showing the two-level version. We know on my laptop it's four levels. And I promised you we'd have a way of making this faster, and that way involves caches. So we're going to talk about caches specifically to make this faster. And you might say, haven't we already done that? And, well, we kind of have, in that if we're thinking about how this lookup works now that we know what caches do, we're not accessing memory three times here. We're accessing the cache three times. We're accessing the cache once to get this page table entry, once to get this one, and once to get whatever the data is here. Yeah. And that might not seem so bad. We said caches are fast. They're fast. Our memory caches are not that fast. Typical L1 cache is like a few cycles per access, and you'd be pretty unhappy if, you know, on your laptop processor, each of your memory accesses took, because of four levels, three cycles per access, had a latency of around 15 cycles. That'd be pretty bad, actually, compared to our three-cycle latency. So that's not acceptable. So we're instead going to have a special cache to speed up this access. And the tricky thing we're going to do with this special cache is this special cache is not going to like speed up these individual accesses. It's instead going to shortcut this whole process. So we're going to take our whole VPN here. We're going to go into our cache, and we're going to get out this value here. Or to put another way, we're going to, you know, take this whole thing here. We're going to go through our cache, and that's going to directly give us what goes here. And we're going to skip this whole access when the cache works. So the question is, why is that going to work? And to think about, like, why is our cache, you know, this cache going to be effective? Why is this going to be faster than just our memory caches we already had, right? We spent a lot of effort, a lot of space to make these fast caches for memory accesses. Why is having a special cache going to be useful here? And to think of that, you know, if we think of what a typical program is doing, we're typically accessing like a function, you know, so there's like a few pages of code and data we're accessing at a, you know, in that function. Because, you know, if we think of even a pretty large function, probably we have, you know, less than 6 kilobytes of actual machine code and constants. Not always, but usually. We might have some like data on the heap we're accessing, but usually it's, you know, only a couple kilobytes, maybe, you know, even tens, hundreds of kilobytes, but not too many. And a little bit of stack, probably like less than less than like a couple kilobytes. So this would mean that we have, you know, maybe 1 to 2 pages of machine code. And 1 to, maybe we're accessing something big, but even something big in terms of number of pages, like 20 pages on my laptop is 80 kilobytes. That's not, we don't often have functions doing that. But, not too many pages of data and, not too many pages of stack. So typically, we're not accessing that many pages of that. And that means that the page table entries we need to point to that data are very tiny and have very good temporal locality, that we're repeatedly looking up these page table entries, much more sort of frequently than we look up any sort of normal data in our memory. And each of these represents these like whole functions. Yes, they're really valuable. And the key insight is because, the actual stuff we need to access to run some code is very small, we can get away with a really small cache. And why do you want a really small cache? Because we can make it really, really fast because it's so small. We couldn't get away with this with our main memory caches because, you could have a 32-byte cache and you'd be really sad because you'd never have hits in it. But here we can have a really tiny cache and have a very good hit rate. And so we're going to have a special cache, for page table entries, and only the last level page table entries. That's called a TLB. This is called a TLB, not a page table entry cache, because IBM made some naming decisions in the 70s. 60s, way back. So this is going to be a cache of page table entries. So how is this going to work? Well, instead of passing in a memory address, we're going to pass in a virtual page number. And as I mentioned, this is going to replace the whole page table lookup. So we're going to get, based on that virtual page number, we're going to get a page table entry for the last level. So that last page table entry we need to actually complete the lookup. So this replaces the page table lookup. We only get the entries from the last level table, usually. There's some exceptions to that, but usually just the last level entries. And if we're looking up by virtual page number, that means that we're going to actually take our virtual page number and we're going to divide it up into a tag and an index. You might say, wait a moment. Don't you mean the tag index and offset? Well, I guess we could say there's an offset. But we usually only have one page table entry per block, and that's because our spatial locality between page table entries is very poor, because typically we're only accessing one page at a time. And also, if we want to have multiple page table entries per block, probably what we should have done instead is have bigger pages, which would achieve the same effect and lower overhead elsewhere. So we have 0 offset bits in our virtual page. So we're going to look that up. And our typical TLB, at least first level TLB, will be tens of entries, because that's going to be enough to have a very high hit rate for most code. Whereas with memory caches, that would be not even close to enough to have a good hit rate. So what does our TLB lookup look like? On a TLB hit, here's my modified diagram where I've hidden all the things we're not going to be doing. Saving tons of time, we're going to take our virtual page number. That's going to give us a page table entry. We're going to get our valid bit and our permission bits from that. We're going to check them. And we're going to combine that with our page offset and our and the physical page number, assuming the valid and permission bits work out, and get a physical address, access the cache. Now the problem is, of course, that sometimes we'll have a TLB miss. So on a TLB miss, we'll do the whole normal page table lookup we already learned, and we're going to send the final page table entry we got, the last step of that lookup, to two places. We're going to send it to the TLB to store, so hopefully next time we don't have to do this again. And also we're going to use it to form the address as usual. Some questions? Yeah. What would be the index bits for the TLB? So it depends on how many sets the TLB has. I think this might explain things better. So remember, we're looking up in our, this is the information that gets passed to the TLB, and the page offset doesn't matter to the TLB because it's a page table entry. Page table entry is valid for the whole page. So our index bits are the least significant bits of our virtual page number. And we have the kind of the same reason why it's the least significant ones as we did for our normal caches. So you can see here that the lookup looks like a cache lookup, but instead of getting data bytes, we're getting a page table entry. In this case, we have a physical page number and some permission bits. Along there, I didn't bother to store the valid bit from the page table entry because if it's not valid, we're not going to cache it. And the reason we're not going to cache invalid page table entries is that we're not going to access them repeatedly. So there's no point in caching. Questions? Yes. So here's a page table lookup. So this is saying, assuming we have a two-way TLB. And often, because TLBs are really small, they'll have pretty high associativity. So I mentioned like fully associative caches as a special case. That is one place where there have been real fully associative caches. So some TLBs are fully associative. Usually these days, they're like, you know, 4 to 8 way sort of things. Okay. So we have our basic TLB idea. So let's say I have a 4-entry. So we store 4 page table entries, 2-way TLB. We have an LRU replacement policy. And first question is, how many index bits does this TLB have? Right, we still have a tag. We still take our virtual page number. And we're going to, for the TLB, going to split it up into TLB index and a TLB tag. There's no offset because our offset is 0 bits. Because we have 1 entry per block. Question is, how many index bits? So who thinks we have 0 index bits? 1 index bit, 2 index bits, no clue index bits. Okay, so we have a split between 0, 1, 1, 2, and no clue. So what does this TLB look like? We have 4 entries among 2 ways, and that means we have 4 divided by 2 entries per way. So we have in, let's say, way 0, we have 2 entries. And in way 1, we have 2 entries. And our index tells us which of the sets we go to, and there are two of them here. So that means we have one index bit. There's two possible indices, which is probably the most common way people get two, but there's only one bit to represent that. So that means that we're going to take our virtual page number and split it up into a one-bit index, and everything else is the tag. So next question, what's the TLB index of address 12345? So that's the virtual address our program uses. What TLB index are we going to access? And there's two possibilities, 0 or 1. Give you a minute to work that over. Oh, and if you want to know, 4096 is 2 to the 12. So who thinks it's index 0? Index 1. No clue. Okay, we have some of us split. So, this is our virtual address. The virtual address has a virtual page number and a page offset. The page offset is the bottom 12 bits because we have 2 to the 12 byte pages. So that's the 0x345 part. The virtual page number is 0x12. If we write this as binary, we have like a bunch of zeros in front, and then we have 1 and 2. This is our index bit, and all this stuff here is our tag. So it's index 0, and the tag is a bunch of zeros, then 1001. The page offset, yes, it's in the address. We're not going to use that until after the whole TLB lookup because we use it to access the actual data in the page once we know where the physical page number is. Okay, so questions here? Yeah? There's no offset in TLB? Yes, because we're storing page table entries. We can't access part of a page table entry, get the whole thing. There is a page offset in the virtual address, but we don't use that as part of the TLB access at all. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so that's where we'll finish up today. So next time we'll finish up talking about TLBs and then start moving on to talking about threads.